Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
It's a horrible statistic, and I wish that it had changed in the last few years, but it pretty much remains the same. 30,000 children will die tonight from hunger and other preventable causes. And over the last few weeks, we have been exploring ways that we can live more simply so that we can share more of what we have with those who go without. If you've missed the previous discussions that we've had, I hope you're going to download the podcasts at theopenhouse.net.au. They're really quite foundational. But just say you adopt a more simple lifestyle, you spend less money, and you're ready to give more away of what you actually have saved. How do you decide who to give to? How do you evaluate whether an organization is worthy of your donation? That's the next and final topic we have to explore with our guide to simple living, Professor Ron Sider. Welcome again to Open House.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Traditionally, there have been choices to make in a number of areas when it comes to charitable giving, and it's really beneficial, I think, if we explore some of those kind of tensions. I think for Christians, the question has been whether to support organizations that focus primarily on evangelism, sharing the good news of Jesus, or those that actually alleviate human suffering. What do you think? Which should take priority?
Well, I think there's settings and situations where it's certainly appropriate just to do evangelism, and there are other settings where it's appropriate just to do social ministry and social action. But if we start with the biblical understanding that persons are whole beings, spiritual beings and material beings, then we know that if we only deal with half of the problem, we're only going to get half a solution. Jesus is clearly the example. He loved the whole person. He preached and he taught and he healed sick bodies. And so it seems to me that wherever possible, we ought to be supporting organizations that are doing holistic ministry, that are combining word and deed, that are truly ministering to the spiritual side of people and also to the socioeconomic. I like to say that people need Jesus and they need a job.
Right. And so those organizations that really are successfully combining both, they're the ones to focus on if we can.
Right.
Another choice has been between giving to emergency appeals, which I think a lot of us do, versus long-term development projects. Again, what is a good balance when it comes to our, I guess, our modus operandi for donations and for giving?
Well, certainly, if somebody's starving, we need to get there with food baskets as fast as we can. That's important. But if we only give a person a fish, we feed them for a day. But if we teach a person to fish, we feed them for a lifetime. Mm. You know, that's community development. That's helping them dig wells and so on. The problem is that so many of the fish ponds are just owned by a few wealthy people. And so if people are going to fish for a lifetime, they need more than just knowledge about fishing. They need a share in the fish pond. Mm. And that involves structural change. So we really need to think about how to do all of those things. Yes, give a fish when a person's starving, but teach them to fish and help them get a share in the fish ponds. We're tempted to just respond emotionally, and we're tempted to give a lot more when there's an immediate crisis. Mm. The more that Christians truly understand the causes of poverty, the less they will be simply motivated by a short-term emotional scene on TV, oh, there's starvation somewhere. And they will be motivated by an understanding that long-term, wise Christian community development and structural change can really empower thousands and hundreds of thousands, literally millions of people, in order to have a better life over their lifetime.
Mm. That raises a really good point as to when our charity can actually be doing bad. At what point are we just giving money away and it's actually perpetuating a problem rather than actually helping?
Well, it's possible to respond to an emergency in a way that does produce a lot of counterproductive activity. You know, if one dumps in a whole bunch of food when you've got a crisis in an area, and in fact undercuts and undermines local farmers who are producing food, you know, that probably has a negative overall impact. So more and more, I think, organizations, Christian organizations that are working at immediate crises will give even food aid in the form of payment for work, and the people who get the food aid then need to help build roads or do other things that will produce longer-term economic development. And they're also careful, wherever possible, you know, to buy the food from local farmers if there is food in the area. Now, sometimes you've got a famine that's fairly widespread, and you can't do that. You have to ship it in.
Mm.
But you don't want to undermine local farmers and local entrepreneurs by your foreign assistance.
Mm. This is Open House. We're talking about simple living with Ron Sider. Ron, hearing you talk there, it makes me realize so often we do just respond to some sort of broadcast appeal. But some of the things that you're talking about, we actually need to have a fairly good working knowledge of the organization we're donating to make sure that they're actually efficient with the money that we're sending to them.
Yes, and good organizations are happy to respond to questions. Questions about the percent of their total funds that are spent on administration and fundraising. Questions about whether or not they have third world persons and minority people and women on their boards and among their top staff. Questions about the audit that they have annually. Is that done by an independent firm that's reputable? Are the board members and staff persons of known integrity? Is the board paid? It shouldn't be. Are staff salaries consistent with a biblical call for justice? You know, it's appropriate to ask those kinds of questions of organizations that we're giving to.
Another question that we need to ask also is that the effectiveness of organizations that channel funds through governments of developing countries. I mean, there's always that fear of skimming. How bad is that fear? You know, should we really be fearing that, or is that, you know, a myth that's been cleared up years ago?
Well, I think that that's a bigger problem in government-to-government foreign assistance than it is with Christian faith-based organizations. I think a lot of governments, Western donor governments today, realize that the private organizations often get a bigger bang for their buck. Faith-based organizations are closer to the grassroots in developing countries and more effective at getting the dollars and the programs down to the people who really need it, more efficient in using dollars and money to, in fact, do important things on the ground than the big state agencies. So I think it's not a big problem anymore, if it ever was, that funds of Christian organizations get skimmed off by government agencies.
The other question would be, is it better to support a small number of organizations regularly or a variety of organizations occasionally? Is there any wisdom on that?
Well, there's no absolute right or wrong on that. There's certainly no biblical teaching that says here's how you got to do it. But I think that just kind of common sense suggests that if one carefully learns about a few organizations, discovers that they're doing good work, they have integrity, they've got the right balance of word and deed, and so on, that then it makes sense to regularly support those organizations. Any organization will tell you that when they get regular donors who give every month, can count on that, they know that's coming in, that enables them to do better planning. So I think I would certainly encourage Christians to become regular donors to a smaller number of organizations rather than just give sporadically to dozens.
Mm, okay, forces us to really research them as well. There are so many organizations out there, Ron, now, and to some degree, sometimes you wonder if a new organization is popping up left, right, and center. I was in the Philippines recently, and we were going down to look at a well-known dump where thousands of people live in poverty around this dump. The interesting thing was that we couldn't go into that dump in the end to take photos because the local authorities had found out that lots of people were jumping in, taking photos, going back, and then raising funds based on the photos, which may or may not have actually been going back to projects working in that dump. Is there anything in particular that should make us question an organization's credibility when we do our research? Anything in particular that should be a warning sign to us?
Well, if too much money is spent on overhead, that's a warning sign. If they're not working closely with indigenous people, and if most of their staff are not local people from the developing context, those are certainly warning signals. If they're not open to answering all the questions that I suggested earlier, that's certainly a warning sign. There's no way around due diligence, carefully exploring an organization until you get to know some of the people and feel confident that they're doing good work.
Mm. Okay, Ron, thank you for your time over this series on Simple Living. Really appreciate your wisdom and insights on it.
Glad to be with you.
Yeah, Ron Sider there, the author of Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, who's been our guide to simple living. If you missed any of the series again, I suggest go to the openhouse.net.au website, theopenhouse.net.au, and click on Listen Again for the podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.